everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Mason Anthony's Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Levin and Thomas Anderson. How are you guys doing?
Good, good.
Pretty good.
Excited for baseball.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think it would happen, but here we are. All right, so promote extend trade, and tomorrow is March 15th, and a lot of important things have happened on the Ides of March over the course of history, but of course the most famous thing that happened was Julius Caesar being assassinated, and he had a pretty good run as a military leader and a Roman consul and obviously a dictator, but you could say that his career was cut short due to injury. So, what Met players are we going to promote, extend, or trade who had careers that were cut short by injury? First is David Wright. Then there's Johan Santana. And last but not least is Doc Gooden.
And that's not fair. You put David Wright in there.
Yeah, Wright's got to be the extension or the promotion. Yeah. Like, he's the best position player of all time.
He's David Wright.
For the Mets. But yes, because he goes in the Hall of Fame if his career is extended, and yay. I mean, so do the other two, probably, but.
So it comes down between Santana and Gooden.
I think.
I respectfully decline.
Yeah.
Nope, can't.
I don't know.
Jeez, that's a tough one.
I'm going to go Gooden over Santana.
Probably, yeah, because he was a Met more than a... Like, if you extend Johan Santana's career, he goes into the Hall of Fame as a Twin, so...
Yeah.
Yep.
Also, Doc's peak, which was also the start of his career, was better than anything Johan ever did. Like, Johan was real great. His best season... Not that I'd like to use WAR as, like, a super barometer for pitchers. Johan was really good. He never did anything like what Doc did in 85. Or even really 84, for that matter. And at least from a WAR perspective, he was never as good as Doc was in 88 or 90. So I think it's got to be Wright, Doc, Johan.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Consensus. It's nice to have consensus. Not too often.
That's a wild one though, because like this is like big no offense to Johan here, you know, like I don't like disparage Santana. It's just unlucky for him to be in that scenario because, like, just goddamn, Doc was. You could have put him up with Seaver if he stayed healthy. Mm-hmm. Just like because we talk about with DeGrom how good of his seasons are, and we're like, was it better than Doc's like 85? You know, like that's how good he was. Like we never
thought
on Santana in that way.
My hot take is still that David Wright should go in the Hall of Fame because I have a, at least by my Hall of Fame philosophy, when there's this sort of outlier in injury situation, I think that merits something of an exception, right?
Like it's one thing comes to mind for that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, and to be clear, David Wright was not the player that Sandy Koufax was.
Like, no. I'm just saying like that type of thing. Like,
right. And I think like it's one thing if you just kind of break down like, oh, my back hurts or my hamstrings are keep tearing. Right. Like, that's one thing. But when you have a diagnosed, very rare in terms of the onset age, degenerative condition like what Wright had, I think that merits extra consideration to say, yeah, like we could pretty reasonably say that under more normal circumstances, this guy's putting up another 10-15 WAR and going to the Hall on the first ballot.
Yeah,
so
you could kind of infer the rest of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no reason to think he would have been bad. Like, he, of course, he would have aged and been a little worse, but like he would have gotten everything he needed to go to the Hall if he stayed healthy.
The last two times he played basically in 15 and 16. It was only 100 and it's only 40 games basically, but 132 weighted, 119 weighted.
He was really good in 20.
Damn.
Like,
David Wright finished his career with a 133 weighted. Like, the dude is a fucking
really good at baseball.
Yeah. I wish younger me had appreciated it more. I didn't know enough at the time.
And also, like, he was kind of there forever.
Yeah. Man.
I mean, with the DH coming, he might have still been active. Like, there's like a non-zero chance he would have DH'd for the... Because how old is he now?
30... Oh, I was looking at Doc Gooden. I'm like, David Wright is 57? That's not right. No, David Wright is 39.
He could have maybe been one year left.
Yeah.
So, like, get to 3,000 hits or some shit
like
that.
He might still have been a better third base defender than J.D. Davis.
Oh, absolutely. That's 39. Not even.
That's crazy.
At least for me, I wasn't particularly upset when the Mets lost the 2015 World Series, because I never expected them to be there, and it was a great run. I'm like, yeah, this was enjoyable. I wish it had been better. The only aspect that upset me was that it was Wright's chance.
Yeah, that was it.
That's to me the most upsetting aspect of that.
Yeah,
loss.
That was it.
Especially with that home run he hit in the first inning in whatever game that was.
Mm-hmm. Three, fucking, right?
You think four? So.
Like no.
Majestic. It was at home, so it was three or four.
Yeah, but I think it was the first one because they won that game. So mm-hmm. I think it was three because they lost the first two in KC. But man, he was still good in 2015. Like, he was an integral part of making
absolutely.
That World Series. Like, he didn't have the greatest playoff in the world, but also it's a small sample size and it's the playoffs.
Especially when you get routed in 4 or 5 games.
One of the best. I mean, my favorite. Still or GIF from the entire 2015 season is in one of those games in Washington where
the day game. Yeah.
Cespedes hit that double and Wright scores from first, and he's just doing this like as emphatic a fist bump as he's scoring as possible. It's like, yep, that was this season, and this season was for you, and I wish we had finished it.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm depressed.
I'm sorry.
It's what this show does to people.
Yeah, it does.
What being a Met fan does to people most of the time.
And also talking about their minor league system.
Mm-hmm. Also depressing. All right, well, maybe something to uplift the spirits. Our way too early draft update. My first guy, Chase DeLuder. He did not play at all this week. You guys might remember he got hit by a pitch in the head in the top of the first inning last week's Friday game, I believe. And then he crashed into the outfield wall in the bottom of the second, like literally minutes apart. So he hasn't played in a week. There's no updates on his status. But it wasn't reported that he was concussed or that he broke anything. So I guess we will see. Missing a week, though, it kind of is starting to... believe it or not, go into, like, considerable missed time territory, because James Madison, his school, they only play, like, 50, 55 games, and, you know, they've played about 20, so.
And college baseball season's short.
Yeah, yeah. For certain, especially the smaller kind of smaller schools. And then my other guy, Landon Sims, like we talked about last week, he hurt his elbow, so that was another easy one for me this week. Not happy about it, though. He did undergo an MRI on his UCL last week. They're getting second opinions, so no news. But regardless of whether or not he's going to need Tommy John or not, obviously it's a major blow to his stock, to the point where mid-first-round selection is basically out of the question. So, yeah, more happiness, I guess.
You've made your job as easy as possible, Steve.
Yeah, so, Paul, do I get to pick someone else here? Because...
I would say if DeLuder misses more time, I think you should get to pick someone, yeah.
Okay, or if Sims presumably does not pitch again this year.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I will hit the books and have someone new next week, then. All right, Lucas, Brock Porter and Dylan Beavers.
So Porter still hasn't played last time I checked because they start baseball quite late where he is at. So no Porter update. Beavers did not have a good week. Oh boy. It was actually quite frustrating to watch because he started this – they played Florida State, which is obviously a baseball powerhouse, and he started off against two tough lefties playing quite well, like didn't strike out, had a couple hits. I was like, yeah, this is progress from him. And then on the sixth, which I guess is the Sunday game of that series, he struck out three times in five at-bats, and basically this whole week – His average has gone from 316 to 267, so not so good. They've been playing Arizona, another major baseball powerhouse, over the last couple of days. He did homer today along with two hits. The strikeout rate's creeping back up a little bit, not to disastrous levels, but 16 strikeouts and 60 at-bats. I can do math in my head, like it's 4 over 15. Still about 25-26%. Look, it's like his BABIP this week is also like 100, so to make of that what you will. Just not a great week. I'm not out on him or anything, but we'll need to see more going forward. If he keeps doing this, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah. All right. Thomas, Gavin Cross, and Brandon Barreria.
Gavin Cross has played, like, a few more games. He's up to 10 games now. I think it was 7 last time we spoke, so he's played a few games this week. And he is up to hitting 366, 458, 756. So he's having a good start to the season.
756 works.
Yeah, his wrist, obviously, whatever the wrist injury was obviously not a big deal because he has come out of it on the other side hitting like he normally would. And if he keeps hitting like this, I don't know where he gets drafted. Just I know his positional versatility isn't the greatest thing in the world, but he's not like a butcher in the corner, but also it's a corner outfielder. But also if you slug 700, you're going to get drafted somewhere high, you know. That's just life.
How many Brandon, homers is he up to now?
Oh, let me check. He is,
you don't have, I didn't mean to put you on the
two
spot.
It's only two, which is a surprise, but he has 4 doubles and 3 triples, so, which the triples are nice. He's actually pretty fast, like he's a big guy. On Baseball Reference, he is listed as 6'3", 215, but he could move. You know, he's not like...
In that Pablo Sandoval mold of big, chunky guy who somehow moves.
Yeah, like, he's also, like, when you see him, he looks more football player-ish, like a built guy. You know what I mean? Like, he's very clearly, like, he's a big boy, don't get me wrong, because 6'3", 215 is a big boy, but it's not... He's in good shape. Like, he's one of those. So he's a guy I could see whoever drafts him. Obviously, this is going beyond the Mets, but he might not need much time in the minors. Like, obviously, he'll get some time to adjust, but he might be a 1 or 2 year guy before he's up just because he's killing the ball in the ACC, you know? Like, and he's already 21, you know? So he doesn't need a million years in the minor leagues before he's up. But yeah, hopefully he's one of the guys the Mets pick just because that would be fun with the DH and rotating cast of outfielders and stuff that they kind of have now because their outfield's a little old. But yeah. And Brandon Barreia has 14 innings pitched, a 0.49 ERA, 3 wins, and 25 strikeouts. So he is too good for high school.
Correct.
Opponents are hitting 132 against him. This is all according to Max Preps, which is a good website for minor leaguers and not minor leaguers, for high school prep arms and stuff like that and prep bats. It's a good way to see how they're going because it could get a little complicated to figure out where they are, you know, because it's not as publicized as the NCAA. Obviously, they're not on TV or anything like that, but he's good. His stuff is way too good for high school at 17. So he's just going to probably keep doing this all year like Andrew Painter did last year, who is my pick.
All right, Ken, last but not least, Jace Jung and Cam Collier.
So Jace Jung is currently hitting. Sorry, one sec. 337, 462, 697. So.
He's good.
Another good slugging.
How his brother needs his shoulders right now, Jesus.
That would be cool.
The Rangers' third base depth chart is...
No bueno.
Tatooine-level wasteland, shall we say.
It's rough.
And then Cam Collier had a bit of a down week. He's hitting a measly 330, 455, 521. So we say, you know, trade. But also he's 17 playing against significantly older people. So
that's really impressive. Like the more I think about it, the crazier I think that is. Because like most high school kids would just be hitting like 150, you know? Even good prospects would have trouble.
When is his birthday? Do you have that offhand?
Player profile, maybe? No.
Okay. Well, I'm sure he'll be turning 18 before the draft.
Oh, yeah.
Since the draft is now in July, so.
Yeah, I would assume that he is 18 before then.
Still, either way, 17, 18. Hell, even a 19-year-old, even if he was an actual freshman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's still impressive. Like, like the gulf of experience between him and everyone else and the gulf of just like 22 to or 21 to 17 is a lot, you know, like or 20 even. It's you grow a lot in those years. You see it in the minors even. Guys bulk up and get stronger and stuff like that as their bodies mature. So
yep. Can I make a correction on Jace Jung's stat line?
Sure. Yes.
Yeah, so I was looking at the wrong page. He is currently hitting 354, 500, 569.
500?
slight improvement.
Slight improvement.
How many homers does he have?
Three so far. Three homers, three doubles, and a triple.
How many games?
17.
Okay. That's a little low on the homers, but I think that's...
He's walked 17 times against 13 strikeouts, and... like I've said the last few weeks with him, he's not going to see much to hit at all.
Right.
No, I can't imagine.
I think this is a slightly weaker team than his brother played for 2 years ago or whenever it was, and his brother barely saw any pitches to hit. So.
And this is one of those instances where we probably, if we had access to the data we have for some of the minor leagues and the major leagues, you'd see a big winger red around the strike zone in terms of his zone profile and his batted ball mix in terms of line drives and fly balls and hard hit rates and pull rates would be muy bueno.
Yeah, I wish we had all that data.
I would say, though, it's still nice to see him not swing at all that.
No, that's a big thing.
There's only so much he could do, and it would be kind of frustrating if he's just like chasing everything out of the zone and not walking a lot. But
it's nice to see him not press.
Yeah, he knows the situation. He's like, all right, if you're gonna walk me, then I'll take it. You know, like that's baseball, and that's always
at a certain point. You need to trust the guys around you to, you know, do their part.
Yeah, because I don't care how good you are. If you're getting balls all over the out of the zone, you're just not gonna really do anything with them if you keep swinging at them. You know.
Right.
Definitely a situation where, like, if he was, let's say, doing this in A-ball or something, we'd be screaming our heads off, promote this guy! But
for sure.
Can't do that in college.
Unfortunately, there's nowhere for him to go.
Yeah, like, sorry, man, you got to ride it out for another 40 games or something, and then we'll send you to AA.
Yeah, that does suck. But again, that's one of those things where, you know, the priorities of a coaching staff on a college team are not the same as the priorities of a developmental staff on a professional team. So if it helps you preserve your job by just walking the shit out of this guy, then you know what? So be it. Yep. All right. So some important news this week. Major League Baseball and the MLBPA came to an agreement. And we'll get to that in a little bit, but we have some more, not breaking news, but more recent news, more relevant news to discuss, and that is the fact that on early Saturday evening, I don't want to say it came out of the blue, because obviously people were working behind the scenes to do all this, but it was not leaked or, you know, no scent in the wind whatsoever, but the Mets traded Adam Aller and JT Ginn to the Oakland A's in exchange for right-handed pitcher Chris Bassitt.
Cover Story, a new podcast from New York Magazine, is coming back for part two. So far, we've investigated the underground world of psychedelic healing. Now, we're going above ground.
I kicked the door down to be in the MDMA clinical trial.
We're leaving the cults behind for the world of labs and accredited institutions.
There are people who are just waiting for this, thinking that they're going to be better, and then they're not going to get better.
Check out new episodes of Cover Story, Power Trip, wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you've always wanted to read Moby Dick, now's your chance. My name is Phoebe Judge, and I'm the host of Phoebe Reads a Mystery. It's a podcast revisiting the classic stories you've always loved, and maybe even some you haven't gotten around to yet. From Dracula to Sherlock Holmes to Little Women, I read you a chapter a day until it's done. And our next book is Moby Dick. Let's read it together. Listen and follow Phoebe Reads a Mystery wherever you get your podcasts.
So for anybody who really doesn't know Chris Bassett, or just kind of knows the name but not too much else about him, Bassett was drafted by the White Sox.
To be fair, he's been in Oakland for
yeah, forever. Yeah. He was drafted by the White Sox, 16th round of the 2011 draft. He worked his way up the system for a couple of years. He made his professional major league debut at the end of 2014. And then he was traded to the A's after that season. And he was in Oakland for 6 years. And he posted a cumulative 3.47 ERA with 166 walks and 483 strikeouts, which comes out to a 2.9 walks per nine. And 8.2 strikeouts per nine. Both pretty good. Only issue, though, is that in those 6 years, he pitched 526 innings, which, if you want to just do basic average, you know, that's about 90 innings a year. But it's a little more complicated than that because a bunch of different factors. A lot has happened in the last couple of years. He missed 2016, 2017, and part 2018 because of Tommy John and the rehab and roster process, all that kind of stuff. He had a leg injury in 2019. Obviously, COVID limited him in 2020. And then last year, he got hit in the face on a comebacker in August, and he missed the last month and a half.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So saying he's injury prone is not accurate. Really, you know, Tommy John and that leg injury are the only non-freak things. But I definitely do wish that he had more innings under his belt the last couple of years, especially because the innings that he has pitched, they have generally been pretty good innings. You know,
he's been really good for like 3 years now.
Let me make a counterpoint to your very fair argument there, Steve. As a 33-year-old, I'd be concerned if he had more innings, right? That the cliff was closer, right? But his arm is almost younger in a way because he hasn't thrown as much. So I'm less worried about him like hitting a cliff anytime soon. Like, there's been studies that you can, like, model out. It's not – I mean, there's definitely an age component, but inning totals are arguably a better predictor of end-of-career decline for pitchers. So that
is – bullets. How many bullets
have
gotten you?
Exactly, right? You can only throw a ball 95 miles an hour so many times before your ligaments kind of go, all right, enough of this bullshit. I'm out. You lose elasticity, et cetera, et cetera. So – I think your point is fair. I might make a slight counter argument, but I don't. Both of us could be right.
I mean, it's not. I'm not so much arguing in favor. I wish he'd had pitched more. I'm just saying, like, especially with the next thing I'm gonna hold on. This Mets pitching staff is a pitching staff that there's a lot of. What's a good way to say this? They're old and we don't know when they're going to stop.
True.
And it could be imminent, you know? And it's not like he is a Marcus Stroman kind of guy where, like, he's been throwing a lot of innings and you expect him to continue throwing a lot of innings.
So I would say the last 3 years have been, like, 2 years ago was the COVID year, which was shortened, so you can't really knock him for the lack of it. Like, what everyone, like, no one threw a lot of innings that year.
130 in 2019 and, like, 150 last year or something to that effect.
It's 144 in 2019, 25 starts, 28 games. Then it's 63 innings, 11 starts in the COVID shortened 2020. And then last year, 27 starts, 157 innings. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, like there's nothing wrong with a high 20s level guy for a high 20s starting guy, like how many starts he has. I did not say that correctly, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like if he gives you 27 starts, it's fine. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
That's objectively a good thing as your number 3 because he's behind DeGrom and Scherzer, where like sure Scherzer has always been healthy, but he's also old and DeGrom has had his injury things, but that's a 1-2-3 that's real strong. That's going to be tough to argue, tough to fight against in, for anyone in any playoff series.
So really the only thing I'm concerned regarding Bassett, well, let me stop. I know we were kind of talking about this very informally last night, and Lucas, you were kind of on the whole thing. Do you still feel very
So, by my own admission, let's say I was not in a not a very.
You didn't have your spreadsheets in front of you, is what?
Yeah, sure. Let's put it that way. I was at a friend's birthday party, and it was
understandable.
It was late in the evening, and et cetera, et cetera. That said, I think, and I'd love to hear Thomas's counter arguments to what I'm about to say here, and Ken's as well, because I think they're both higher on this than I am. I'll start by saying the cost is totally fine. I have no problem with trading JT Ginn, because I think he's probably bad. And while I would have actually really liked to hold on to Adam Aller, he's the kind of guy I love holding on to as a lottery ticket. A team like the Mets really shouldn't be giving him an opportunity, and that's just kind of the opportunity cost of being a contender, right? You trade these.
Yeah.
The Mets do not have a rotation spot or a 10 starts to give Aller, right? And if your goal is to get one of the buys, you can't be doing that. So trade him to someone who also sees the upside. That's fine. And it's possible like he pops and is something real and okay. Like this cost of doing business. So if anyone's complaining about the prospect cost, I think they're wrong. But much like going back way back here to the Tyler Clipper trade, I don't totally love the target, right? So way back when the Mets traded for Tyler Clipper, they traded Casey Meisner. I'm like, I don't give a shit about Meisner. Just why did they choose this pitcher? And I'm certainly not that low on Bassett. There's a lot to like. I know there's since I've made those comments last night, I've learned a little bit more about like the less public metrics about his stuff, his seam shifted wake, his vertical angle.
That's right, like his whole thing. Like,
right. That's like his big appeal. My thing with Bassett is, at least for me, he's certainly been quite good the last couple of years. He's been, to me though, it only looks really like 1 year of really high end production, right? And perhaps I'm underrating the 2019 performance, and the 2020 performance was short enough that just due to variance, the strikeout rate and walk rate weren't quite there. To wrap this long rant up, this isn't the first guy I would have targeted. And if it turns out that Tyler Molly, for instance, gets traded at a similar cost, I think that would have been a better move. Now, if Tyler Molly gets traded for a prospect package that would have been commensurate with the Mets giving up Beatty or Alvarez or Vientos or whoever, then yeah, this is probably fine. So I don't like dislike this. It just wouldn't have been my first choice is where I'm at.
Or if Molly is traded at all now because they traded Gray. So like,
that's a fair point. Sure.
Like
sure.
That might be instead of trading Molly, they might've gotten, cause they got Chase Petty for Gray, so they might have just said, we'll just keep Molly as the guy. You know what I mean? Like, we don't know what internal stuff happened with the Reds either, because I know the Mets targeted Molly first. Like,
that and Ginn was part of that presumed package.
I would assume so. Like, yeah. I would assume that it was pretty similar and someone pivoted. I don't know who, but like, it's entirely possible the Reds did, and the Mets were like, oh, okay, this is the next one. We might never know that, so we'll see if the Reds have Molly starting on opening day, I assume, at this point.
It might still be Castillo, unless they trade
him. Oh, that's true, but I expect them to trade him. But, yeah.
Like, I'm not at a spot where I'm, like, giving this a C. It's just more like an A- instead of an A+ for me.
I got you. Because, like, Bassett is just he's good, and he's good in a way that, like, I know the seam shifted wake stuff is popular, and I don't 100% understand it, but I think, like, the layman's term is, like, his fastball moves in a really weird way, and hitters don't understand how it moves, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's going from a pitcher-friendly park in Oakland to another one here, not so it's not as pitcher-friendly, but still, like, it's not like he's going to Citizens Bank where it's a huge change for him.
Sure, he's familiar in Citizens Bank Park.
I know, yeah. Sorry, with the Phillies infield defense, it's going to be hilarious when he gives up 800 soft hit singles to Alec Boehm at third base.
But Gregorius, who can't throw, and who's playing second for them at this point? Still Gene Segura? Or...
I don't even know.
Oh my god. Anyway.
Poor Familia.
But yeah, it's just like, I think also while I wish they kind of addressed this before the lockout, I understand because they just went super in on Scherzer and they got him. The guys who are left for free agent pitchers are like, I would rather Bassett over Kikuchi, and I would rather Bassett over Cueto, and I would rather Bassett over pretty much anyone left. So,
no argument from either.
So then if you factor in both of those things, you know what I mean, then and you're not giving up any of the prospects that you really value, because I think even though they would trade Mauricio, they want to do it for someone really good, you know? I think they're saving that chip for someone a little better than this. So when you factor in all of that, I think it's fine, because I don't think they care about Gino too much. You know, like, that's just, I think, the long and short of it.
I think we were quite rosy in our assessments of Gin, and I watched less of him than you and Ken and Steve did, but just looking at the metrics, like, a dude who's supposed to be an SEC pitcher with three average or plus pitches.
Very, very meh.
Yes.
Right.
Meh is a great – he wasn't bad. He wasn't bad, but he was just
I'm still pretty high on him. Like, he was not valueless. I like him a lot still. I think he's going to be a solid pitcher somewhere, but.
At the
end of the day. Right, yeah, exactly. It's like.
When you have Scherzer and DeGrom, like, you have the makings of the best top of the rotation in baseball with Scherzer and DeGrom if they're healthy. Like, that's it. That's like two of literally the best pitchers in the game. And if Bassett is as good as he's been, it might be the best rotation in baseball. And then, like, okay, cool. Let's win who's going to beat us in a 7-game playoff series? You know? Like, that's the goal.
How many years in a row have the Mets had the quote-unquote best pitching staff in baseball?
I mean, and sometimes it's happened.
It's at least, like 8 of the last 10.
I know.
I mean, and I know
Scherzer to be healthy.
Thomas also likes to make jokes at Carlos Carrasco's offense, not entirely unjustifiably. And IL stint when, et cetera, but there's still some, like, the last time Carlos Carrasco pitched a healthy season, he was a number two starter as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's some, like, if this rotation totally pops, it's going to be fucking disgusting.
And then, like, Taiwan Walker was really good for the first half and fell apart in the second half, which injuries and stuff, but if he's just an average pitcher as your 4 or 5, cool. That's better than almost everyone else's 4 or 5.
Perhaps also most importantly, the Mets now have, for the first time ever, good starting pitching depth. Like, we've poo-pooed David Peterson and Tyler McGill to various degrees at different points, and Trevor Williams is Trevor Williams, and Jordan Yamamoto's shoulder might be borked. And
he is pitching, though, I will say. He threw yesterday or something. Mm-hmm. So,
but his flow game is on point.
Yes.
Right? But having those guys as, like, your 6th through 10th starters instead of your 4th, instead of fighting for a 5th spot and then leaning on, I don't know, Harold Gonzalez or similar names from years past, like
the Mets Josh now, Walker, like that.
Like, Josh Walker's now their 11th starter, basically. Like, they have objectively good starting pitching depth.
Yeah, like, Tyler McGill was, I have reservations about him, but he was good last year. Like, I can't argue that. And he's
definitely
your 6th
starter.
You know what I mean? He's your 6th starter. When someone has a blister or whatever and has to miss 2 games, McGill is starting, and he could win you 2 games easily in the middle of the season. You know?
Yeah.
Like, and then if something else happens, David Peterson has had good major league innings before. He's had bad innings too, but I don't, like, as your 7th, that's perfectly fine. Right. I want them to get one more guy, but that's nitpicky at this point because I'm quibbling over the 8th starter in the rotation, you know? Like, it's hard to get starting pitchers, and the Mets now have a decent amount of them, and that's nice.
The only thing that I'm a little iffy on here, and it's also partially, if not the reason why the cost for obtaining Bassett was literally just JT Ginn, basically, is the fact that he just has one more year. He's 33, and he has one more year on his contract. So would you lock him up for another year, maybe a third with an option or something like that? I would be happy if they did such a move.
I don't think it would be too
expensive. I would do $345 like now.
Yeah. That's fine with me. Like, just to lock in the window. The window's now. The window's like the DeGrom opt-in, because if he's healthy, he'll opt-in and they'll figure it out. Like, they'll probably guarantee some years to keep him around. And the Scherzer contract is like 3 years. Like, the window is now. Mm-hmm. So they need to figure that stuff out now. And if you kind of have Bassett along with them and you just have like the old guys rotation for a little bit who are still good, then you just roll with the dice there and then you figure it out after that. But
he's also the kind of guy who takes that like Whit Merrifield deal, mm-hmm. where you like, because Bassett effectively didn't
making $8 million this year, like,
right, and he's 33. He's gonna hit free agency at 34. Teams don't pay for that anymore. It's not gonna cost I can count. It's not going to cost eight. He's not going to sign an eight-figure contract in free agency, right?
No.
And you can give him a deal saying, like, hey, man, you at this point, you're just not going to get that real payday. We'll give you $50 million to stick around for security. And I think he'd take that, and I think the Mets should do it.
And that would be nice to just kind of have that stability, and then you could figure out the rest of the rotation after that. Because that's hopefully, if Allen's healthy, then he's a nice guy. But, like, you could start figuring him out in a few years, you know, like.
And like maybe one of those options. Right. Yeah. Maybe one of the guys we were just talking about, like, pops at some point.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
So, but now you don't need
left-handed ace Joey Lucchese.
Oh, I forgot about Joey.
Yeah, I forgot about him.
He should be back by the end of the season, right? Maybe.
I can't remember when he had it.
Pretty sure.
Yeah. Bring back the
jerk. But yeah, I mean, if they are able to lock him in for at least another year, I mean, however long, but 1 year, I'd be happy. I would say this is A-plus trade, whatever. Because, like I said, the only thing that worries me is, like, to see the Mets basically get screwed like they got with Javi Baez last year and losing a prospect for ultimately something that doesn't move the needle and matter ultimately. If the Mets
to me, this is a little different than Baez, just because, like, I don't know, they were
right. Well,
out of it at the deadline, and it was a weird deadline, and the Mets needed another starter. Like, they could not have gone into the season with the starting group that they had, and if they signed Cueto, I'd be like, come on, guys. Like, I love Johnny Cueto, and it would have been hilarious, but also I would have been like, all right, let's get serious. Like, who are you actually throwing out there to pitch, you know? Like, this is a full season thing.
I don't mean it in philosophy as of why the move is made as much as the effects after
I get you.
Said and done.
I also, because Ken made a really good point. Ken made a really good point in Slack that they could replace Ginn really easily in this draft. Like,
there's never a shortage of, you know, those guys. Like,
and they have a million first round picks, and I'm sure Conforto is going to sign and get them another comp pick. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They have
I mean, we've obviously.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's just go ahead.
No, because I was saying they have the draft capital to just replace the arm with someone who's probably healthier, you know, like who's someone who isn't a year off of Tommy John and didn't look great coming off of it, you know. So,
I mean,
that's another thing that they might be factoring in.
Speaking frankly, like, Ginn is a draft failure. Not in that he's not going to get to the major leagues, but when you draft someone knowing they're hurt and it's not an underslot situation, you're betting on more upside than anything we've seen from Ginn, right? So at least in my mind, and it's possible that maybe he does find that high end stuff.
It's too soon to say.
Let me rephrase, right? If Ginn never shows that high end upside, which we've not seen yet, that is a draft failure in my view, right? That is a suboptimal choice. You could have gone with someone healthier or someone younger and cheaper. Like, you could have gotten more value out of that pick is what I'm saying. So this is not an irreplaceable asset.
No, two things. One, definitely, he's not an irreplaceable asset. It's not like this is a Kaz, Muir, for Zimbrano situation.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I'm hearing a lot of Gintzlander here. he was fine. He was in Brooklyn. He was decent. You know, the biggest thing was like he didn't have the oomph on his fastball that he was supposed to have, and that's something that might come back. His slider in the couple of games that I saw him, it looked pretty good. Again, he was facing hitters that he probably should be getting out anyway, that probably haven't faced that kind of breaking ball before. But for a guy who had come back from Tommy John surgery a couple of weeks prior, it was fine. The changeup, like, it wasn't really there, but you know, again, that's why he's in the minor leagues and not in the major leagues. It's something that he still needs to learn. He's not an untalented guy. There's plenty of talent. I think he's going to have a big league career, but he's definitely not irreplaceable.
I think he's probably going to be like a back end of a rotation guy for a team. Yeah. And that's fine, but I would also trade that for a good starter now when you're trying to win a World Series.
When he was drafted, we expected if everything broke right, he would kind of be a mid-starter, mid-to-back-end guy. And I don't feel like that has changed. I think that he will. But like you said, you know what? Why cross our fingers that everything goes right and he develops into that when we could just get that right now?
And also, like, this, it's also where you are in your window here. Like, I said before, the Mets need to win that. Like, the Mets window is now. Like, the division is getting worse. Freddie Freeman might go to L.A., and that leaves the Braves kind of in a – unless they get Matt Olson and kind of replace him. Like, Olson's worse than Freeman, but obviously he's still very good. Like, the division is there to just be the Mets's for the next few years. And I wouldn't let a potential back end of a rotation guy in a depth – in a swing, not a swing guy, but like a up and down fifth starter type, get in the way of getting a very good pitcher. So kudos to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, I kind of thought this was going to be a bigger, I thought it was going to be a bigger prospect haul when I saw the name first. I was like, ooh, I don't know who they gave up for 100%. Him. I was a little worried.
That's why my first reaction was like,
yeah, I was just like, I like Bassett, but I hope it wasn't like McNeil or something, because they don't have the offense to replace that, or if the A's were being weird. But no, the A's were just salary dumping an $8 million player because
that's their lot in life.
Yep.
So, yeah, no complaints from me about all this. All right, and now the other news is Major League Baseball is going to be starting the season on time. Minor leaguers that were on the 40-man are probably not going to miss any time now. We talked about them last week. Mets had a bunch of guys that were added to the 40-man roster to protect them from the Rule 5 draft and missing at the time. We figured prolonged time because of a lockout. It would have been a very inopportune time for most of those guys. And now I doubt that that anybody's really going to miss any time. Maybe the pitchers might miss like a week or two, you know, since camp has been going on for a week and a half now. But the beginning of the season is usually weird in that regard anyway, and pitchers pitching the cold and still building up stamina and whatever else, roster movement. So nobody's going to be impacted developmentally because of what happened. So it's good.
It's also like they won some things.
Rule 5 draft got canceled. It was supposed to happen in December, but it got postponed. Yeah, and then last week we heard rumblings that a bunch of teams wanted to postpone it or possibly cancel it. And sure enough, now it's official. And kind of going to be interesting to see how MLB handles the Rule 5 draft next year, because the 2023 draft technically would have twice the amount of players that would normally be eligible. They'll have any holdovers who are still not on the 40-man roster, plus anyone who is eligible next year. So
Yeah, that's a good point.
We've talked about this.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, we'll see. In terms of the Mets, we've mentioned, you know, a couple players were in our top 25 that were unprotected. Number 11, Hayden Senger. Number 18,
Hayden
Josh Singer's Walker.
Spreading for nothing.
18, Josh Walker. Number 20, Brian Matuyer. And number 23, Carlos Cortez. And the odds of any of them being selected were, you know, pretty slim. Not going to say zero because you never know, but pretty slim. Basically, their attractiveness to other teams went in that order, too. You know, Senger being a solid defensive catcher in Double A, there, you know, you could stash a guy like that on a roster, play him once a week, whatever. Walker being a cromulent lefty, solid, unspectacular season in the upper minors, you could put him in a bullpen. Matuyer, you know, a low minors guy with insane movement on his cutter, his curveball, but no idea where it's going. He's the kind of guy, you know, you just pitch him in blowouts, whatever, if you really like him. And Carlos Cortez, I don't know, he has no redeeming qualities to me, but whatever. Someone could have liked him, maybe. But, yeah, so everyone on the roster is good. Oh, excuse me, who was not on the roster is good. And the Mets did have a spare spot on the 40-man, and they could have made a pick if they wanted to and then added him to the 26-man roster. I mean, obviously now they have Bassett, so it's full, and the draft has been canceled, so it doesn't really matter. But we did all this work and effort weeks and months ago when the draft was supposed to take place, and I'm not going to let all of our effort go wasted. So what guys were you interested in seeing?
I have
if
a
the Mets
weird.
Did have, yeah, sure.
I have a weird one given their current roster construction. Like I've ranted a little bit about, and by a little bit I mean a lot, about how they should get rid of Dom Smith for like basically whatever because he doesn't fit the roster, and also I don't think he's very good. But the guy I want them to pick is a left-handed first baseman outfielder named Ryan Noda from the Dodgers. So Noda actually was an older draft signing by the Blue Jays. He was traded to the Dodgers in that Ross Stripling trade a couple years back. And he's just, like, obliterated every level of the minor leagues he's been at. Plate discipline, power, some strikeouts, but not an absurd level. Is he actually good? I don't know. Is he someone that I'd gamble the last spot on the bench? Like, bring him into camp and gamble that he can win that last bench spot over Cano or whoever else? Hell yeah, I would.
This is such a Lucas player. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, here's stats from AA last year. 250, 383, 521. That's a 140 weighted runs created plus. 29 homers in 475 plate appearances. 16% walks, 27% strikeouts, roughly. Like, it's going to strike out. Going to hit probably a platoon bat. But I think the power and plate discipline things are real. And, like, that's better than what I think Dom would put up. Like, he might already be a better hitter than Dom, but if you can basically if you could cycle Dom out for anything and replace him with someone in the same mold who has I would argue more uncertainty and therefore more probability distribution above Dom, I would do that.
It's also an organization where, like, you're taking a guy from the Dodgers who won't ever really use him, you know? Like,
exactly.
He's right. Just kind of stuck in purgatory there in L.A. Just, we don't really know how good he is in the major league level because he just, there's too many people there. He won't ever get a shot. Mm-hmm. Like, so a team with less depth is going to have to kind of get him out of that situation.
That's kind of what happened with the J.D. Davis, how we got him.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great
really
point.
Had no... Like, opportunity in Houston.
Yeah, like he was stuck there because of how stacked Houston was, and the Mets saw an opportunity with his like his underlying numbers. And I mean, to say it didn't work out is I think they should still trade him, and he wasn't as good last year as he was before, and he can't really play defense. But that's a good trade for the Mets, all told, because he provided more major league help than pretty much anyone else is going to give them for that price and that money. And then if they trade him for another an optionable arm or something, then it helps the roster again, you know?
Mm-hmm. Thomas, who were you looking at?
I was looking at, so I went in a different direction where, because the Mets bench to me is interesting, because right now I don't think this will be the bench come opening day, just reading the tea leaves with the rumors and stuff like that. But the bench right now is like Guillorme, J.D. Davis, Nito, Dom, whoever doesn't DH.
Dom. And
yeah, like a fourth outfielder to be named later. Like there's literally no fourth outfielder here right now. And so I would be taking Samad Taylor, who is a Blue Jays prospect. He is.
I love this.
Yep. You know exactly where I'm going with this, right, Lucas?
Yes.
He's only 5'10", 160, so he's small. I don't think he's really going to hit much, but you don't need him to because he plays literally everywhere and he's fast. So with the world of the DH now, where you don't really need a pinch hitter, you don't need everyone on your bench to be able to come into a game and swing the bat and hit in the 13th inning maybe or something, like you could theoretically just roster a defense-only guy. You know, like Luis Guillorme, as much as I sometimes slander his hitting, is not a defense-only player. Like he could hit an empty 290, 300 with some walks and be like an okay offensive contributor for like 2 or 3 weeks when someone gets hurt. But a Samad Taylor, who he swiped 30 bags in the minor leagues before, he's never really hit like crazy. Last year he did hit very well last year, 294, 385, 503. So like to say he has no offensive ability is wrong. That was in Double A at 23 years old. But even if he's the whole point of a Rule 5 guy is you'll be able to hide him. And I think you could be able to hide a guy like this on your roster with the DH, considering how fast he is and considering he's logged time at second, short, third, center, and left field. And so when you have that type of versatility, and he's already 24, so it's not like he would be out of his depth to be in the majors right now, you could theoretically get away with a guy hitting a low 200s if he could run and he could play defense everywhere, because you could use him as a late inning replacement because you don't need to pinch hit everyone on your bench. You don't need those guys. Like we've talked about that before, how the DH could possibly change your bench the way it works, because a guy like Dom, who's supposed to come in and hit a tough righty out of the bullpen, is not really necessary because you have a DH and you have all this other stuff there. So I would like to see the Mets do that just to really beef up their depth, like not their depth and their flexibility on their bench. And that's what something I would look at.
Punching the air right now.
Right? That would be so awesome.
I love it. He was another name I'd considered.
Because it'd be so fun just to have like, it's like he could just stay in the majors and have like 3 at bats.
Yeah.
And 800 stolen bases. It'd be awesome.
That works for me. All right, so we have a bench power bat. We have a bench defensive replacement stolen base specialist. Ken, who is your guy?
I'm going the traditional route with Tim Cate, a left-handed pitcher from the Nationals organization, solely because I saw him a little bit when he was at UConn and thought he might have some utility, and left-handed relievers are typically the stickiest.
Yeah.
So, went real boring with it.
But that's also probably the most useful use of it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's pragmatic.
And they need a lefty. I literally don't think they're right now.
You could either throw David Peterson in this role and then stretch him out if you need to, or you can take a near carbon copy from the Nationals. So.
Might as well steal from the Nationals, make them worse.
Am I misspelling his name? Wait, am I just stupid? I'll figure this
out.
You're
a very smart individual.
I'm like having a stroke. I can't find him on FanGraphs. It's okay. It's not a big deal. I mean, this guy's much more likely to stick than either mine or Thomas.
Oh, yeah. Because there's a chance both of our guys hit 150 and you're like, all right, you gotta go.
And are striking out 40% of the time, literally. So, yes.
And
my guy.
No, go ahead.
My guy is, I'm taking a little bit of aspects of everybody's. I'm taking your 50% strikeout rate. and Ken's left-handedness. So basically, I said to myself, all right, mid-season last year, the Mets outfielder Adrian Hernandez, he retired. So why not replace Adrian Hernandez with Adrian Hernandez?
Oh, no. Is this another DJ Alexander Ramirez situation? We don't need another one of these. Yes.
So Toronto Blue Jays left-handed. Oh, no, actually, he is a right-hander. I'm sorry. Damn. Oh, well. But Blue Jays reliever Adrian Hernandez. His middle name is Ulysses, though, so that's pretty awesome.
Okay. I was
going to say. But he pitched three levels in the Blue Jays system last year. Low A, Dunedin, High A, Vancouver, Double A, New Hampshire. He posted a 2.74 ERA in 61.2 innings over 31 games. He allowed 30 hits in total. He walked 29, which is a little higher than you want to see. But he made up for that by striking out 108, which is a 15.6 K per nine. He's 5'10". He weighs 170 pounds. His fastball sits in the high 80s. So what the hell is this guy doing? He has a plus-plus 2,300 RPM changeup.
All right.
That's hilarious. Cesar
Valdez light.
I like it.
He throws it about 50% of the time. In the recorded data that we have on, you know, the individual pitches themselves, his changeup has about a 50% whiff rate. It moves like a... It's just a thing of beauty. And when guys are facing Max Scherzer at 100 and DeGrom at 100 and Walker and Bassett and Carrasco at like 95, then they face this dude and it's lights out.
I quite like this, actually. Hell yeah. Those short guys often have really nice fastball properties just due to being so short. If they get like normal rise on their fastball, it's coming from such a lower slot that their vertical attack angle is much flatter. So that might be playing a factor here as well.
Or they're like Riley Gilliam, where that doesn't happen.
Oh, sure.
And oh, well.
It gets smashed.
Not every short guy.
I'm imagining poor minor leaguers who've like never seen a good changeup face this thing, and they're probably like, what in the world is this?
He's a witch!
Yeah.
Burn him!
This is like Carlos Cortez, but like actually interesting.
Yeah.
You know, if he pitched his fastball with one arm and then his changeup with his other arm, that would be...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
That'd be certainly very strange. And also illegal, because
there's
you
a guy
have
in
to
the
choose...
draft that's an M.
You have to choose... right. One hand
yeah,
for an at-bat.
Entire at-bat.
Right. So you'd have to throw only fastballs or only changeups. That might not work so well.
The Pat Vendite rule. There is a guy in the draft that is legit, what's his name? A legit ambidextrous pitcher. I'm hoping so badly that the Mets are able to select him because... The possibilities are endless. And he's an ambidextrous pitcher, and he's a legitimate ambidextrous.
Yeah, it would just be fun to have.
And
that
the best part, so he's an ambidextrous pitcher, and I can't pronounce his name, which is even better. His first name is Durangelo, and I believe he is from like Curacao.
Oh, yes, is this the guy like Jugolino or whatever? Yeah, that guy.
Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about.
It's spelled C-I-J-N-T-J-E. So, however that's pronounced. And he's also 5'11".
I thought you were going to say 5 foot. I was like, oh, wow, okay.
Jordan Gello T-G. Shit.
Well, I'm hoping that he does... I'm hoping he doesn't go to Mississippi State. I'm hoping that he gets drafted and has a long professional career as whatever he is. But yeah, any of those guys, if they were drafted, would have improved the Mets. But we'll see. Hopefully they, next couple of weeks, are active. They're said to be active. So hopefully they can make some moves, make some... low-key free agent signings, whatever, that improve the team.
Yeah, they probably get like a reliever and some depth. So they need a fourth outfielder, like, desperately.
Yeah. So, I mean, they need to move Dom, because right now the bench is full, and but doesn't make sense on this roster.
Yeah, that's – or JD. Either one, I'd rather move Dom, because I think JD has a little more utility, but I don't think Dom gets you literally anything. So I think they're going to end trading JD for some optionable arm or something and get a fourth outfielder and kind of
– I mean, I'd rather give up a guy I don't think is good for nothing.
Sure, that's fair. Dom
than
sell
low on JD, but
– I get what you're saying. I just – I don't know if the Mets agree with you, honestly. I just have no clue.
They should sign someone like Andrew McCutchen or something, like a good fourth outfielder. But we'll
trade
see
for Kevin Kiermaier and just let him play fourth outfielder.
I'd actually quite like – I would love that. I love Kevin Kiermaier.
See we'll if you see. Get a prospect from the Rays to eat the salary. Manny Margot, some shit like that.
All right, well – if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complexthequeens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Swiper. Lucas is at elvlawhost343. Ken is at ken1191. And Thomas is at saidmetseason.szn. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.